The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon. Get ready for Leadership Leverage with Dr. Robert Denker. No matter what role you play in leadership of your organization or business, you are sure to get helpful secrets that will improve that role. Now here's your host, Dr. Robert Denker.
Hello, good day, and welcome to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Denker, and today on Leadership Leverage, we'll be exploring the topic of leadership from a unique perspective. That is, we'll be gaining an understanding of mojo. In our discussion, we will learn what mojo is, how to get mojo, how to keep it, and how to get our mojo back if we lose it. To help us navigate this journey today, our guest has the knowledge to help all of us find our mojo and to be able to answer the question, got mojo, with an affirmative yes. I'm referring to the distinguished educator, author, and one of the world's most famous executive coaches, Dr. Marshall Goldsmith. Dr. Goldsmith is widely recognized as the world's leading authority in helping successful leaders achieve positive, lasting change in behavior for themselves, their people, and their teams. Last year, he was named by the London Times and Forbes as one of the 15 most influential business thinkers in the world. The American Management Association has listed Marshall as one of the 50 great thinkers and leaders who have influenced the field of management over the past 80 years. He is one of a select few of executive advisors and coaches who has been asked to work with over 120 major CEOs and their management teams. Currently, he teaches executive education at Dartmouth Tuck School and other leading business schools. His books have sold over 1 million copies and have been translated into 30 languages. His articles, videos, and resource pages have been viewed by more than 4 million visitors from over 195 countries, all which can be accessed on www.marshallgoldsmithlibrary.com. His book entitled Mojo, How to Get It, How to Keep It, and How to Get It Back If You Lose It is a foundation for our dialogue today. Marshall, welcome to Leadership Leverage.
Very happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
We're delighted to have you here today. You know, Marshall, I have to ask you because I'm curious now. I mean, you've edited or authored more than 30 books, so why do this book on this topic at this point in your career?
Well, you know, this book is good for a lot of different people. One, it's good for people at my age who were looking at, they've been through one part of life and they're looking at a different life. Another one, it's good for younger people, people who are getting ready to embark on a career, or for people at mid-career. My previous book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, really focused on how to change interpersonal behavior. Mojo focuses on intrapersonal. The previous book was How to Become a Better Leader, Build Better Relationships with Others. And Mojo is looking inside at yourself and say, how can I find happiness and meaning in my own life? And by the way, nobody can define that for me, but me. Nobody can define it for you, but you.
I think that's a great point. So what exactly is mojo? And maybe you can give the listeners a personal example of maybe where the genesis of this whole idea.
Well, mojo is that positive spirit toward what you are doing now that starts from the inside and radiates to the outside. And mojo is something we can see as we journey through life. For example, on American Airlines alone, I have over 10 million frequent flyer miles. I'm
wow.
always flying on the plane. One flight attendant is positive, upbeat, motivated, enthusiastic. Another one is cynical, bitter, angry. They're on the same plane with the same uniform at the same time. What's the difference? Well, the difference is clearly not what's coming from the outside. The difference is what's coming from the inside. And mojo is something that varies by person, And within the same person varies by activity, and even within the same activity varies over time.
So, Marshall, what are some of the, what I would call building blocks, or maybe even better word would be the ingredients of mojo?
Well, I talk about, first, our identity, how important identity is. Another thing is achievement, and I have a different definition of achievement than that is normally what people talk about, our reputation, and that's how other people view us. And then finally, probably the most important part of the book, and for many people the most difficult, is acceptance. Accepting what is, being able to change what I can change and let go of what I can't change. So identity, who am I? Achievement, what am I doing? Reputation, how am I seen by the world? And then acceptance, my ability to accept what is and change what I can and let go of what I can't.
So, Marshall, maybe we could take each one of these ingredients and maybe you could highlight some of the salient aspects of each. You talk first about identity. Talk more to us about what it is and how does one determine their identity?
Well, our identity comes with the intersection of the past and future and the intersection of self and other. And I talk about four components of identity. How do we know who we are? If mojo is, you know, that positive spirit to what you are doing, it starts from the inside and radiates to the outside, how do you know who you is? Well, the first part of our identity is what I call our remembered identity. Our remembered identity is how we view our past. How do you think you're a bad tennis player? Well, how do you know that? Well, you remember events where you lost playing tennis.
Sure.
These memories shape your identity of who you are. The second part is called our reflected identity. That's what other people in the past have said about us. For example, you might part of your identity might be, I'm a bad listener. Well, how do you know you're a bad listener? Well, in the past, someone told you you were a bad listener. You accepted that feedback, and it became part of your identity.
Yeah, and I think that's particularly true of those that are in power positions or have power over us. I'm thinking of parents or a boss as an example.
Oh, exactly. The next one is called our programmed identity. Our programmed identity are those same people, only what those people now are projecting on into our future, what we're going to become. And I'll give you a personal example. I'm from a small town in Kentucky called Valley Station, Kentucky. I was brought up in a low-income, low-education environment. My high school in the state of Kentucky test scores last year out of 220 was ranked number 218.
Oh, wow.
So I wasn't brought up in Harvard prep. The odds on me being one of the top 15 business thinkers in the world from where I'm from, a little bit remote.
Yeah.
Well, when I was brought up, though, I had some different programming. My mother went to college for 2 years and was a first grade school teacher. My father had a two-pump gas station. My mother clearly did not want me to grow up and work in the gas station. She wanted me to go to college.
Sure.
So when I was growing up, what did my mother say in terms of programming for me? She said, Marshall, you are smart. She didn't say you're kind of smart. You're extremely smart. She said, Marshall, you are the smartest little boy in Valley Station, Kentucky.
You had a good mom, Marshall.
Oh, very, very driven. She said, Marshall, you are smart. She also said, you are going to college. She said, not maybe I'm going to college. She said, you are going to college. In fact, you're going to graduate school. I mean, how many people I went to school with have PhDs? Not too many.
No.
And she also said, Marshall, you have no mechanical skills, and you will never have any mechanical skills for the rest of your life.
Uh-uh.
I got this message, you have no mechanical skills. Well, why? She didn't want me to work at a gas station, right?
Right.
So I'm never encouraged to be on cars, tools, doing mechanical things. So now my friends think I have no mechanical skills. My father says I have no mechanical skills. I'm 18 years old. I take a test, the United States Army Mechanical Aptitude Test. That test was like, name that tool. They showed you pictures of tools, and you got to guess the names. I scored in the bottom 2 percentile of the whole United States.
That's funny.
I was defeated by random chance. Now,
yeah.
I'm 26 years old. I'm getting my PhD at UCLA. I never questioned this. I take a class from old Dr. Tannenbaum. He says, Marshall, what do you do well? What did I write? Scholarly pursuits, research. What was I saying? Smart, smart. What are you no good at? I have no mechanical skills. I will never have any mechanical skills. He looked at me and says, well, how do you know that? I said, I took a test. It's hopeless. I was defeated by random chance. He said, how are your mathematical skills? Oh, I said, 9 courses of math, past calculus, have an undergraduate degree in mathematical economics. Excellent mathematical skills. He said, why is it you can solve complex mathematical problems, but you cannot solve simple mechanical problems?
Sure.
I said, good point. He said, how's your hand-to-eye coordination? I said, I guess it's okay. I could play pinball games, shoot pool, and drink beer. He said, why is it you can play pinball games and shoot pool, but you can't hammer nails? when I was 26 years old, I finally realized the only reason I had no mechanical skills was I was told I had no mechanical skills. I believed that. It became part of my identity, and I lived it out. There was no logical reason I had no mechanical skills. It was just programmed.
Right.
And by the way, I see this with people I coach every day, even CEOs. They'll say things like, I can't listen. I look in their ears. I say, why can't you listen? You got something stuck in there? Or I can't give recognition. Why not? Are you genetically impossible to be nice to others?
Yeah.
You know, we talk about ourselves in many ways as these programmed identities as if they're genetic facts, when in reality they're often just messages we've bought into. Now, the final element of our identity is called our created identity. That is developing an identity for our own future and saying, who is the me I want to be?
Mm-hmm.
Who is this person I want to become? And an example I use in the book is the rock star Bono. Amazing guy. I didn't know much about who he was. I knew he was a rock star, but I didn't know his music at all because it was recorded after 1975.
Sure.
Kind of took me out of the picture. But I had the privilege of having dinner with him one night, so I had 2 or 3 hours to talk, and fortunately he didn't ask me about his music since I knew nothing about it. But he talked about his identity. He started out being a regular guy, and part of his identity, regular guy, and he's still a regular guy. He used the F word about every third word, and he would apologize for swearing. I said, look, it's okay, I'm from
Valley
Station.
Well, that helps him be a regular guy. Right, exactly.
I said, I'm from Valley Station, Kentucky. I thought the F word was the adjective that preceded all nouns. This really doesn't bother me, right? And then he's still a regular guy. Then he became a rock and roll fan. And he's still a rock and roll fan. He talked about groups and how much he loved them, and his face would all light up. Then he became a musician, and obviously still a musician, but not just to make money. He talked about being a musician and what it meant to him and playing by himself with the family and how he loved it. Then he became a rock star. Then he talked about what it's like to be a rock star, and he wasn't bragging or showing off. That's who he is. He's a rock star, right?
Mm-hmm.
What it's like to be a rock star. And then, finally, now he's a humanitarian. He talked about how he was a humanitarian, how he was helping others. I watched this guy all night. He was so dedicated.
That's right, and that's an interesting story, because when you see him advertised now, there's more about his causes, and I think he's very involved in Africa.
Oh, he is.
Right, and so you see him more that way than you do with his group, or than you do, the quintessential picture of a rock star. So that's interesting in terms of this creative identity that he's brought here. Marcia, we're going to need to take a commercial break, pay our sponsors, and when we come back, let's close off about identity and talk about the other ingredients that make up your mojo. You're listening to Voice America Business Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Denker, and we'll be right back after this message.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Since the year 2000, RDN Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RDN Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
Tune in to It's Your Money with host Bill Pfeifferlich. You'll get an eye-opening education about some of the misconceptions of the financial world. If you are a business owner, working professional, or successful American, you will benefit from the information on our program. Our guests will include financial service professionals, international tax and estate attorneys, and CPAs. We'll identify solutions that you can implement now to get the most of your money. Tune in Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time for It's Your Money on Voice America Business. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and we've been talking today on the concept of mojo. Our guest is the distinguished and ever popular educator, author, and most famous executive coach, Dr. Marshall Goldsmith. I'm sorry. His book entitled Mojo, How to Get It, How to Keep It, and How to Get It Back If You Lose It is the foundation of our dialogue today. Marshall, before we went on to break, we were talking about the four ingredients that make up mojo, and the first one is identity, and you were relating a wonderful story about the rock star Bono and his identity. Maybe we could conclude that part and then go on to the second ingredient of mojo.
Well, as you discussed, he has established a whole new identity for himself as a humanitarian. And the point I make in the book is I encourage the readers not to limit ourselves with our identity, not to sit there and say that's just who I am, as if we cannot change. And the final point is we can establish a new identity without being a hypocrite or a phony. He's not a hypocrite or a phony, and he established a completely new identity for himself in a very positive way. And my point is to the reader, we can all do that. We don't have to be locked into what we've been in the past. We don't have to stereotype ourselves, and we definitely don't benefit from putting ourselves in a box.
So it's really don't play the role or become a victim in this, but whatever your remembered past is or your remembered identity or reflected identity, you can change it.
Exactly.
Now, outstanding. How about the second ingredient?
Well, the second identity.
You talked about achievement.
Achievement. Now, I talk about achievement from two dimensions. One is what I call professional mojo, and the second is what I call personal mojo. Now, professional mojo, that is more traditionally the way we think of achievement. For example, you can do a checklist to measure your professional mojo, and I have it in the book. Am I motivated? Do I have the ability to do it? Do I know what to do and how to do it? Do I have confidence, and am I authentic when I'm doing this? Well, if the answer is if you're motivated, able, knowledgeable, confident, and authentic, you're probably doing as about as best job you can do at whatever you're doing. And that's what I call professional mojo. That is what I am bringing to the task.
Okay.
Now, there's a second element, though, which is really different in the book. It's called personal mojo. That is, what is the task bringing to me? Does this task make me happy? Is it meaningful for me? Do I find it fulfilling? Am I grateful for the opportunity to do it? Do I feel I'm supported when I do it? And am I getting the rewards from this task that are important to me? And our personal mojo is something, our professional mojo is, you can measure results on that, and the rest of the
right.
world can tell. But that personal mojo, that's all on the inside.
So, Marshall, if a person asks the question of their personal mojo, and the answer isn't a positive one,
right.
what do they do with that?
Well, that's going to get, why don't you save that question until we get into acceptance?
All right.
Because what I'm going to talk about with that is either change me or change it.
Okay.
And what you need to do, if your job, let's say you get a high score in your professional mojo, you're doing a great job, but on the inside, you don't feel good yourself?
Right.
Well, you've got a problem.
Sure.
I mean, you're doing a great job, it may be the wrong thing. And, you know, one thing, I haven't published this yet, but in my new book I'm going to talk about, my research has kind of proven we're all going to be equally dead.
Yes, we are, aren't we?
Yeah, we're all going to be equally dead. And
yes, we are.
Let's say you go through life with all this professional achievement, but on the inside you're not happy. You don't think it's meaningful. You're not grateful for the opportunity to do it. You don't feel you're supported and it's not rewarding to you. Well, question, did you win or did you lose? To me, you didn't win.
Yeah, you're really getting to the core meaning of existence here with that question, absolutely.
Exactly. And so what if you achieve a lot of stuff on the outside and the rest of the world may think you're successful? Who are you kidding?
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't convinced that person on the inside, you just lost.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, the third element, reputation. Reputation is how the rest of the world sees us. It is their perception of who we are. And obviously this reputation impacts all these connect to each other. Our achievement impacts our reputation. Our identity impacts our achievement and our reputation.
Sure, they're all interconnected.
They're all interconnected.
We're talking about them separately, sure.
And, well, our reputation is interesting because that's what I do for a living. What I do is not only help successful leaders achieve positive long-term change in behavior, I really change their reputation, the way they're perceived by everyone around them.
Mm-hmm.
And, by the way, I've learned it's much harder to change reputation than it is to change behavior.
Mm.
The best research principle in psychology is called cognitive dissonance theory. We all view people in a manner that's consistent with our previous stereotype. So if I have a stereotype of you that says, you're a bad listener, well, your reputation to me is bad listener, I'm going to look for bad listener in whatever you say or do. And in my coaching process, I teach leaders how to get feedback, talk to people about what they've learned, develop clear action plans, follow up in a disciplined way, and measure improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really teach people how we can change our reputation. And by the way, we can change all of these elements. We can change our identity, we can change our level of achievement, and we can change our reputation. And I talk about how we can change that reputation. Also in the book, there's a fun exercise called the brain pill test.
That's right, and I'd like you to share that with our viewers because I think that's an important exercise for them to hear about.
Well, it's fun. It says, imagine you could take a pill. And after you take this pill, for the rest of your life, you will be 10% smarter. Your IQ is going to go up 10%. And you get this permanently. On the other hand, for the rest of your life, the world is going to see you as 20% dumber. Do you take the pill?
And
there is
not
a right or wrong answer, by the way. Each person's answer could be different. Do you take the pill? Now, let me ask you a question. What do you think? Would you take that pill?
No, I wouldn't.
And why not?
Well, because in the business that I'm in, which is similar to yours, reputation is what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as the clients perceive me in a positive light, that's more important than my own intellectual horsepower.
I totally agree with you. In my job, parallel to yours, my success or failure is based on my ability to help my clients.
Mm-hmm.
And if my clients think I'm stupid, my ability to help my clients is going to go down.
That's right.
And although I might know I'm smarter and I might be smarter, my ability to help others is going to be limited. So me, I would not take the pill. On the other hand, I've worked with other very good people who would take the pill.
Sure.
They've said, you know, really, I don't care that much about reputation. What I'm more concerned about is my own intellectual achievement or my own art or my own skills. And the rest of the world's opinion doesn't matter that much to me. What's interesting is there's not a right or a wrong answer to the question.
That's right.
It's a good question because it forces you to think.
Mm-hmm.
Would you take the pill? And again, I wouldn't, you wouldn't, other people who are equally good as you or me would take the pill.
Would take it.
For different reasons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
So the fourth and the last ingredient, as we're calling it here, in establishing your mojo is acceptance. And I notice that in your book you refer to the teachings of the Buddha on this issue. So I'm wondering if you could say more about this for us.
Well, we can spend a little time on acceptance because, to me, as a Buddhist, acceptance is a large part of Buddhism. I've been a Buddhist for about, over 30 years. And many schools of Buddhist thought. So when someone says they're Buddhist, it doesn't tell you a whole lot. Buddhists would only do what I teach if it works for you. If it doesn't work for you, don't do it. Well, given that broad sort of proviso to start with, you can imagine the many different interpretations of Buddhism.
Sure.
But my school is basically find happiness and meaning now. Not next week, not next month, not next year, but now. The great Western disease, I'll be happy when I get the status, the money, the condominium, the BMW, and really the inability to accept what is. In the book, I talk a lot about acceptance, and I'll share just a couple of thoughts from the book.
Yeah, please.
The first one I learned from Peter Drucker, and although Peter Drucker might not have defined himself as a Buddhist, this was a very Buddhist idea. Peter Drucker taught me just a great lesson that few of us ever deeply internalize. Every decision in the world is made by the person who has the power to make the decision. Make peace with that. Not the best person, the smartest person, the good person, or the right person. Every decision is made by that person.
Mm-hmm.
If you need to influence that person is the customer. You're not the customer. That person is the customer. And what you need to do and learn to do if you want to make a difference is, number one, accept that the customer is who the customer is, and two, learn how to sell. Because if you cannot communicate and influence that person, you will not make a difference. Now, as obvious as this sounds and as simple as this sounds, it is amazing how few people in life ever deeply get this point. The kid comes home from school. Daddy, Mommy, it's not fair. The teacher gave me a C. I deserved an A. Guess what, kid? The teacher had the power to make the decision.
Right.
You didn't sell the teacher. The teacher was the customer. You lose. Welcome to the real world.
Well, you're right. And Marshall, I don't think that types of lessons are taught in homes, or certainly not taught in our academic centers as well. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, totally. And let me give you another example. The opposite is often taught. People often graduate with large amounts of education, and they'll say things like, I'm amazed at someone at that level. Have you ever heard people say that?
Oh, all the time.
I'm amazed at someone at that level, followed by his weird, crazy, esoteric, or does strange things. Now, I'm going to point out how insane that comment is. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever read a history book, yes or no?
Yes.
In the history of the world, have most people at that exalted level been women or men?
Men.
Men, younger or older?
Older.
Is there anything in the history of this world that would lead you to believe that when you take a bunch of old men and you give them tons of money and status and power, they begin to act exceptionally sane and rational? Did you read that book?
No.
I didn't read it either. Yet we talk about the world as somehow decision makers are all supposed to be incredibly sane and rational and logical. What in history would you lead you to believe that was true? So I think very important to learn decision makers make decisions. Make peace with that. Quit waiting for them to be who they aren't. Quit waiting for them to be who we wish they were. They are who they are. And if we can influence those people, we can make a difference. And if we cannot influence those people, we can't make a difference. Think like a salesperson. When you sell, you don't sell to your needs, you sell to their needs. You figure out what's important to them. You sell to the higher cause, not to your cause. And you realize you are in this influencing sales position. They are the customer. And if you can influence them, you make a difference. And if you can't influence them, you don't. So back to that person who's having issues with personal and professional mojo. A lot of the reasons people score low on personal mojo is inability to accept what is.
Mm-hmm.
They're just waiting for something to be something other than what it is, and then they keep being disappointed because they can't find it. Another thing I talk about in the book in acceptance is what I call lost in logic. Now, I can relate to this. My undergraduate degree is mathematical economics. I work with a lot of engineers and scientists.
Sure.
Many engineers and scientists are what I call lost in logic. They just go through life being angry because things aren't logical.
And again, you know, they've been programmed that way to think about that the world in a logical perspective.
Right.
And Marshall, we need to take a break, but I want to come back and pick up on this logical perspective when we come right back. We need to pay our sponsors. You're listening to Leadership Leverage here on Voice America Business. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Denker. Stay with us.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Since the year 2000, our DN partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RDN Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
Technology is changing the way we live our lives and how we do business. On CIO Talk Radio, we talk about the benefits of technology and the great things it allows us to do, as well as its risks. Heard every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, Sunjo Gall interviews business leaders and other experts that are shaping the way we use technology. To learn more about the show, visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Keep up with the changing world of technology and listen to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjo Gall. Listen in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, right here on Voice America Business. From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and today we're talking with Dr. Marshall Goldsmith about mojo, how to get it, how to keep it, and how to get it back if you lose it. That, by the way, is the title of his new book, which is the foundation of our dialogue today. Marshall, before we went on to commercial break, we were talking about the four ingredients that make up mojo, and specifically the last ingredient about acceptance. And you were talking about how difficult it is for people to take on this acceptance, to make it work in their lives, and you are relating this to a theory of logic that you often see that's prevalent perhaps in those in the engineering or scientific fields. Could we go back to that and explain that to our listeners?
Yes, the term I use in this is called lost in logic.
Okay.
And this is really people with technical backgrounds, and again, my undergraduate degree in mathematical economics, I'm prone to this myself. We tend to get lost in logic. We talk about life as if decisions are supposed to be made based on the basis of logic. And as I mentioned earlier, I learned from Peter Drucker, decisions are not made on the basis of logic. They're made on the basis of power. Whoever has the power to make the decision makes the decision, not the most logical person. And frequently you hear engineers and scientists say, well, that's not right, or it's not logical, or it's not rational. Yes, that is true. It's not right, it's not logical, it's not rational, it's reality. And getting engineers and scientists over this can be a real positive gift, because then instead of trying to be right all the time, they try to make a positive difference. One of the biggest challenges of everyone I work with is the successive need to win or be right. And I use a case study in my previous book. Imagine you want to go to dinner at restaurant X.
Mm-hmm.
Your husband, wife, partner, friend, or significant other wants to go to dinner at restaurant Y. You have a heated argument. You go to restaurant Y. It was not your choice. The food tastes awful. The service is terrible. Option A, you could critique the food. Point out our partner was wrong. This mistake could have been avoided had only they listened to me, me, me. Option B, shut up. Eat the stupid food.
I'm laughing because I've been there.
Try to enjoy it and have a nice evening. What would I do? What should I do? 75% of my clients, what would I do? Critique the food. What should I do? Shut up. Well, You know, it's funny. I ask my classes, how many people have ever critiqued the food before? They all raise their hand and say, was that smart or stupid? They always say, it's, I think, incredibly stupid.
Right.
And then another example is even worse. You have a hard day at work, a hard day.
Sure.
You come home, your husband, wife, friend, or partner is there, and the other person says, I had such a hard day today, I had such a tough day. And we reply, you had a hard day. You had a hard day. Do you have any idea what I had to put up with today? Had you had a hard day? We are so competitive, we have to prove we're more miserable than the people we live with. I gave this example at one class at Dartmouth. A man in the back raised his hand. He said, I did that last week. I asked him, what happened? He said, my wife looked at me. She said, honey, you just think you've had a hard day. It's not over.
That's cute. That is cute.
So I think, you know, we get lost in being right. We get lost in being logical. We get lost in winning. And what we forget about is what matters. What we forget about is what matters. Another element of this is, you know, adding too much value. My friend David Ulrich taught me this. I'm young, smart, enthusiastic. I come to you with an idea. You think it's a great idea. I'm your direct report. Rather than just saying great idea, the natural boss tendency is to say, that's a nice idea. Why don't you add this to it? Problem is the quality of the idea may go up 5%. My commitment to executing the idea may go down 50%. It's no longer my idea. Really hard for smart, successful people not to constantly go back to this logic, constantly go back to adding value, and sometimes at the expense of making a positive difference in life or building relationships.
That's right. I couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely. You know, you talk in your book, too, about a concept called no-jo. Could you talk to us about that?
Smith-Klein, what did you learn about leadership as a CEO of this big company? He said, I learned a very hard lesson. My suggestions become orders. If they're smart, they're orders. If they're stupid, they're orders. If I want them to be orders, if I don't want them to be orders, they're orders anyway. I said, what did you learn from me when I was your coach? He said, you taught me one lesson that really helped me be a better CEO and have a happier life. Before I speak, stop and breathe and ask myself one question, is this worth it? And he said, 50% of the time, even as CEO of this huge company, if he had the discipline to breathe and ask, is it worth it? You know what he decided? Am I right? Maybe. Is it worth it? No.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. So the next time we try to get lost in logic, prove we're right, can't accept other people for being who they are, just ask yourself a question. Is this battle worth winning? And you know what you're going to find a lot of times? A lot of the battles we're spending our life fighting, they're either battles we can't win or battles not worth winning.
Well, that's true, and I've experienced that in my own career.
Yeah, as have we all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, in the book, you refer to something called the mojo paradox. Could you talk to us about what that is?
These are my three favorite lines in the book.
Okay.
Our default reaction in life is not to experience happiness. Our default reaction in life is not to experience meaning. Our default reaction in life is to experience inertia. We all tend to go where we've been going, do what we've been doing, and say what we've been saying. The power of inertia is incredible. Let me give you a simple example.
Yeah, please do.
I'm always flying on the airplane. I get off the airplane, I go to the hotel. If I'm not careful, I turn over, click, I turn on the TV. There's a made-for-TV movie on, an idiotic made-for-TV movie about some mother killing her cheerleader daughter's friend. 2 hours later, I finish watching this stupid movie. I say, why did I watch the dumb movie? I don't get enough sleep. The next day I wake up, I'm tired. I think, what an idiot. I gave this example at Dartmouth again. A man in the back raised his hand. He said, I watched the movie twice. I said, why? He said, I don't know. It was dumb the first time. Well, it's inertia. It's inertia. We just tend to keep doing what we've been doing, and it takes power to stop inertia.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I have, by the way, there's another website called www.mojothebook.com.
Okay.
If you go there, you can get a download on the professional and personal mojo. We talked about that checklist. You can get that checklist. And you can also get what's called the mojo meter.
Okay.
The mojo meter enables you, as you go through the day, after every activity or after every time frame, to ask yourself two questions. How happy was I and how meaningful was this? And what I love about this concept, and my daughter Kelly and I are working on this with employee engagement, what I love about this concept is it really keeps you aware of what's going on around you. And I use an example in my classes. Let's say, imagine you have to go to a meeting, a boring meeting, stupid PowerPoint slides, you don't want to go, it's going to take an hour and you have to go. Well, we've all been to those meetings.
Oh, too many, yes.
Too many. If you knew at the end of that meeting you had to evaluate yourself on two questions, how happy was I and how meaningful was this? Let me tell you, you'd act differently. Because you'd realize, you know what, that's 1 hour of my life.
That's right.
I'd start acting, and I've asked thousands of people this question, what would you do? They come up with all kinds of creative ideas about things they could do, ranging from take copious notes on something else, no one will know the difference anyway, to analyze what's going on in the room, to get to meet someone, to figure out how to make a contribution. People come up with all kinds of ideas.
So, Marshall, what you're really saying here is that these questions help keep you in the moment.
Exactly. Exactly. And as one of the things I talk about in my book, I do myself, is called the Daily Question Process.
And that is what?
Well, I have my own coach. By the way, if any of your listeners would like to get a copy of my daily questions, send me an email, marshall@marshallgoldsmith.com. I'll send the questions and an article. But I do this myself with my own coach. His name is Jim Moore, great guy, good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Moore and I do this discipline every day. We did it today already. He asked me 24 questions. Same questions every day. Now, what's the first question he asked me every day on a 1 to 10 scale? How happy were you yesterday? I mean, I don't have to work. I live in a beautiful place, Rancho Santa Fe, California.
Sure.
I've got a nice wife and nice kids. If I'm not happy, I'm an idiot. Second question, 1 to 10 scale, how meaningful was yesterday? My day was meaningless. Whose fault is that? How well did you plan and execute your day? How many minutes did you spend on meditation or positive thinking? How many push-ups did you do? How many sit-ups did you do? How many minutes did you walk? Did you say or do something nice for your wife or your son or your daughter? How much do you weigh? Are you current on your physical examinations? Are your clients up to date? How many minutes did you write? Just basic questions about life. It is amazing how well this process works.
I would think so, because, again, it's anchoring you in the moment. In this case, a reflective moment. You're reflecting back on the day. Now, he does this every day with you?
Exactly. And he'll tell you this process saved his life. Didn't kind of save his life or sort of save his life. It did save his life. One question I ask him, are you currently updated on your physical exam? He said no 90 days in a row.
Oh, my.
After 90 days, you know what he said? This is ridiculous. I have to either get the physical exam or quit asking the stupid question. He got the exam. You know what the doctor said?
What?
You have cancer.
Oh, my.
Now, he's going to be fine. The doctor also said, had you waited 7 more months, you'd be dead. Now, my friend Jim is 65 years old. He's a chief learning officer of 3 multi-billion-dollar companies. He's a very brilliant man.
Mm-hmm.
He knew he should have gotten a physical exam. But you know what? He just didn't do it. When you have somebody look, you know, look, throw that mirror in your face every day, and you got to look in that mirror and answer these questions, hard to hide.
It is hard to hide. And really, again, a very, what I would call, straightforward exercise, very practical, simple in some respects. But I think it's the discipline to have someone do that every day and for you to want to have that done every day. That's what makes it perhaps not that easy.
Well, I talked to a really brilliant man named Dr. Atul Gawande from Harvard Medical School.
Okay.
Dr. Gawande has a new book out called The Checklist Manifesto, an excellent book. And he talks about the importance of people having checklists as they go through their various activities in life.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses a sad but true example. Medical doctors, if you go in for a surgery in the United States and a nurse asks the doctor a series of questions from a simple checklist, the odds on unneeded infection plummet and the odds on unnecessary death because of infection are cut by two-thirds.
How interesting.
Huge majority of hospitals don't have the nurse ask the doctor the questions.
Nope. You know, Marshall, again, very insightful in terms of the knowledge that you're sharing here about this topic of mojo. Marshall, we need to take a commercial break. We'll be right back in about 2 minutes. You're listening to Leadership Leverage here on Voice America Business. Stay with us.
Well,
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Since the year 2000, RD and Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RD and Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and the Grow Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and we've been talking today on the concept of mojo. Our guest is a distinguished and ever popular educator, author, and most famous executive coach, Dr. Marshall Goldsmith. Marshall, before we went on to commercial break, we were finishing up on the concept of acceptance as it relates to mojo, and you were talking about acceptance, relating a story about the checklist and Dr. Gawande, I believe.
Yes, yes. Dr. Gawande, professor at Harvard Medical School, just wrote a book called The Checklist Manifesto, totally consistent with what I teach in the book Mojo. I have a daily checklist I use every day, and by the way, when I described the process to him that's from the book Mojo, you know what he said? I'm doing the same thing myself.
Okay.
He works as a medical doctor. He said, I need to do this with my life. There's no reason I shouldn't be doing it. Well, the negative story and the positive story. The negative story I talked about is, in the U.S., if you go in for surgery and the nurse asks the doctor a series of questions, the odds on unneeded infection plummet and the death rate because of unnecessary infection is cut by two-thirds. Huge majority of hospitals don't allow the nurse to ask the doctor the question. Why? The doctor has too much ego. That's the negative story. People die every day because of ego. The positive story. I work for the admirals in the United States Navy. I don't charge them any money. I just do it because, you know, it's a fun thing to do and I enjoy it. And I wasn't in the military, so just a little, you know, way to say thank you for their service.
A way of giving back, right?
Way to give back. And they don't give me money, but they give me treats. 2 years ago, I got to spend a day in a nuclear sub, standing at the top, diving down. It was so much fun. Last year, even better, where did I get to go? I went to the danger zone.
Oh, yes. Did you?
I got to fly on a U.S. Navy fighter jet for 95 minutes. Unbelievably fun experience. I got to fly the plane 10 minutes. It was just amazing. Well, my host was Admiral Mark Guadagnini, who at the time was, he's now a two-star admiral. At the time, he was a one-star admiral in charge of naval aviation training. I'm talking to Admiral Guadagnini, and I said, you know, sir, I told this story about the doctor. And I said, the doctor doesn't allow the nurse to ask these questions, yet I noticed before we took off, you've got some kid asking you questions every day. And they're simple questions, how much fuel do they have? And I noticed you don't object to some young person asking you questions. And the doctor doesn't do it because their ego's too big. I said, no offense, sir, but nobody in the world's got a bigger ego than a Top Gun pilot who becomes an admiral in the United States Navy.
I would think.
How come you allow the person to ask you the question? His answer was very sad and very true. He said, Marshall, big difference. Operation crashes, you die. Plane crashes, I die. He said, you put a gun to the doctor's head and said, sir, if this patient dies of an unneeded infection, I'm going to blow your brains out. They'd ask the questions twice.
Well, that's right.
Very, very.
Marshall, a question for you, because you brought up an issue of age, young versus old, and I'm wondering, in our diverse workplace and global economic world, is mojo impacted by gender or cultural differences to any major extent?
Well, I think it's actually more important for the younger generation, and it has become increasingly important. Let me talk about why.
Mm-hmm.
In the old days, one of my biggest clients was the most admired company in the world at that time. I could go to their corporate headquarters in 1980 and shoot a cannonball down the hall at 5 o'clock and hit nobody. The place was empty. These people worked 35, 40 hours a week and took 5 weeks of real vacation. Hmm. Today, in that same building, the same people work 60 to 80 hours a week and take no weeks of real vacation. With emails, voicemails, global competition, people are working harder today than they've ever worked before and are under more pressure. In the old days, if you didn't love what you were doing, but you were working 35 to 40 hours a week and taking 5 weeks of vacation, it wasn't so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Today, if you don't love what you're doing and you're working 60 to 80 hours a week and get no weeks of real vacation, you're living in new age professional hell. Critically important today, especially for young people, to love what they're doing because it is so much a part of their life. Globalization is tough. I'm very proud of my daughter. She has a PhD from Yale. When she started in the PhD program at Yale, there were 22 students in the program. She was the only one born in the United States.
I'm not surprised at that. That's right.
They're not there to get drunk and go to parties. These kids are serious. I did not have to compete with these people. My daughter does. Everything I talk about in that book is, to me, important to everybody, even more important to young people entering the workforce today.
In this issue that you were talking about, talk to us about the issue of being happy and getting this happiness and it's maybe it's opposite guilt that some maybe comes with being happy.
Well, you know, I coached a lot of men and a lot of women. And if you look at 360-degree feedback, the average woman is perceived to be a better leader than the average man, according to Marion Ruderman, Center for Creative Leadership, 3,000 people in the database, very interesting research. The average woman consistently and amazingly has one issue to deal with more than the average man. What is this issue? Guilt. Mm-hmm. Women are harder on themselves than men. One coaching I have with women much more than men is, please don't be too hard on yourself. And I'll just share with the group in my final 5 minutes that talking about how to be happy and let go of guilt.
Please do.
The first thing I would say